Good afternoon. Welcome to the Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs. It is now 1:07 p.m. We're in the Gruenberg Room 120 here at the State Capitol in Juneau. Today is Tuesday, May 18th. Present, we have Representative Nelson, Representative Clayman, Representative Tarr, Representative Story, Representative Shaw, and myself, Representative Tuck. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to do business. Please mute your cell phones. And I want to recognize Bjorn Stevens with House Records for documenting today's meeting. And then we have Madison Truitt in the back here with Juneau, serving with the Juneau LIO for moderating the meeting. I want to thank both of you for helping us out, making us look good. House Records is working remotely, so please speak into the microphone so we can get things recorded properly. We have two items on the agenda today, House Resolution 9 and a presentation from the Viper Transitions Program. First up is introduction of House Resolution 9, encouraging the home porting of the new U.S. Coast Guard icebreakers here in Alaska. This resolution is sponsored by Representative Christ Tompkins. Representative Tompkins, if you want to join us and put your name on the record, and please begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and honorable members of the committee. For the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, District 35, Southeast Alaska. And if I may, House Resolution 9 is a simple resolution saying that as the United States Coast Guard proceeds to build new icebreakers, that all due consideration should be given to Alaska as a location to home port those icebreakers. And the backstory on this resolution is I read in the ADN, a Seattle Times reprint, as the ADN often syndicates, of a story about how the Coast Guard was looking to expand its base and port in Seattle in possible anticipation of home porting icebreakers. And my immediate reaction is baloney, and that some of those should end up in Alaska, given we're the only Arctic state in the Union, and I'm tired of Seattle basically claiming assets that rightfully belong to Alaska, be it the Alaska Fisheries Science Center, which just grinds my gears that 1,000 employees solely dedicated to managing Alaska fisheries all live and work in Seattle. I think it's sort of patronizing to the state. And then also the decades-long odyssey of trying to get the research vessel Fairweather homeported in Ketchikan, away from Astoria, Oregon, which looks now finally to be a reality thanks to the work of Senator Stevens and members of this legislature, and most recently Senator Sullivan. So rather than see these go somewhere else and then try to fight to relocate them, just try to get it right from the get-go, and especially in recognition of the notable Coast Guard assets already in the state, the potential of the Nome port being further developed with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers investment. And this resolution is very timely. We're in touch with Senator Sullivan's office, who's strongly supportive of this and is looking for sort of all help and support to make the case in D.C. And the moment I read that article, I texted Kevin McCabe, Representative McCabe, about it, given his tenure in the Coast Guard, and he responded with many exclamation marks about basically his reaction was exactly what my reaction was. And so worked with him on drafting the text of this resolution, as well as a number of other legislators in the House, and working ASAP to try to get this to the House floor, ideally tomorrow, both in second and third, and pass so we can get it off to D.C. before session adjourns. So that's the resolution, and that's the backstory.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair. I had a few questions. In the article you were referencing from the Seattle Times, said the Coast Guard announced this back in 2019, that Seattle would be the home port of the first three. Was this previously brought up back in when the Coast Guard announced it, or is this just now being pushed? I'm just wondering, previously during the last session.
Representative Nelson, through the chair, no, this is the first time that the legislature has advocated home porting in Alaska. I'd have to find the article in question, but or the reference that you're making to speak to it. But independent of the reference, a number of home border Coast Guard icebreakers are not yet spoken for, so to speak, in terms of home porting, so the resolution would be pertinent for those.
And let the record reflect that Representative Rauscher has joined us. Thank you. At 1:12, I'm sorry.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, I definitely support where this resolution is going from. And trust me, more than anyone else, I want to see these icebreakers be brought up to Alaska. And you touched on it a little bit in your resolution, but I'm kind of wanting to see what the capabilities are for Alaska to house deepwater ports and multiple icebreakers. So, like, are the current ports of Alaska or in Anchorage or wherever across Alaska, are they capable of sustaining such an immense vessel?
Through the chair, I believe the Coast Guard base in Kodiak has substantial facilities, but I think the bigger point here is if it doesn't exist, it should exist. And I think that's a lot of the thinking around Nome and having an Arctic port. Representative McCabe may know sort of more specifically what facilities currently exist. I mean, with the research vessel Fairweather didn't exist, but that's why there's a $20 million appropriation, which, by the way, that money should be going to Ketchikan to facilitate the onboarding of the vessel. And as far as I'm concerned, the exact same thing should take place with icebreakers.
And if I may add, I agree with what Representative Tompkins says. If it doesn't exist, then it needs to exist. Kodiak is the largest Coast Guard base in the world.
And a quick
follow-up.
And I completely agree with you. You know, with let's try to bring more capabilities up here in Alaska. I'm just looking at the article, and it's saying back in the 60s, you know, the Coast Guard already acquired some multiple piers out in Seattle. And so maybe we can work on moving some of this language around and encouraging more investment up here for infrastructure to facilitate these icebreakers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering, in the be it resolved, if it would be worth sort of having more than one option, kind of like the backup option, if they didn't want to home port the entire new three fleet of icebreakers. You know, would it help it, or do you feel like it would strengthen it if we had more than one option in terms of kind of our communication? Or is the goal is really not Seattle at all Alaska?
Representative Tarr, through the chair, it's not explicitly to the exclusion of Seattle. I think just in recognition that that's perhaps where the bulk of the vessels will go, all equal. Some of these icebreakers are going to use in the Antarctic, and the existing icebreaker fleet is already there. So, I mean, it totally makes sense that, you know, Seattle's going to get, some of that investment. I think what this is, just trying to say is, Alaska should be in consideration for at least a vessel or two rather than just, be totally and entirely overlooked in terms of these assets. So totally game to tweak or reframe the language. To be totally candid, I think the article came out on Friday possibly, or Thursday. We had it drafted by Friday. It was read across yesterday, it's noticed today. We're opening it. So very, very game to work on any amendments or reframes, because I think there's, among all 40 members, alignment on what this is trying to say. Maybe as a floor amendment, just in order to sort of preserve the expeditiousness, but fully supportive of any reframing that might be needed.
Thank you.
Yes, and I just want to remind the committee that this is a House simple resolution. Typically, it does not need to be a committee referral. It would normally just be on the floor. Can be on the floor. Mm-hmm. We just wanted to exercise what we can here, but it is the intent of the chair to move this out today so we can have that on the floor tomorrow. Representative Klayman. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you had Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, through the chair. So planning process for the base improvements kicked off last week with a notice in Federal Registry, starting a 45-day public comment period. So is this going to be one of our public comments? Is that what this intention is, to be a public comment for this public commenting period? And that's question number one.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair. No, not specifically. More this resolution is, the goal of this resolution is get it to Senator Sullivan's office so they can sort of have it as an additional tool for their advocacy for these icebreakers. And so in our conversations, mine, Representative McCabe's conversations with her office, they said, oh, this would be super helpful. And I can't speak sort of specifically what forums or venues they intend to use resolution for, but there was no discussion of the planning process specifically.
And a follow-up?
Oh.
Line 27, page 2. In the state, maybe in Alaska, rather than in the Port of Seattle? Just a question.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, I think, a good thought and could be a reframe of the resolve clause, perhaps in lines with other suggestions that I think Representative Tarr was highlighting. So I'd be happy to work with that.
Coming in later, I didn't know whether it was already suggested or not. Thank you.
Of course.
Any further comments, questions? Representative Story?
Yes, thank you, Chair Tuck, and thank you, Representative Kreis-Tompkins, for bringing this forward. My comment, it's great you've reached out to Senator Sullivan's office. How about with the Coast Guard? Have worked with, this would be a great resolution to share with them too, of course, and try and get them on board with, we appreciate so much what they do for Alaska and their home port here, and would like to know if you've gotten any feedback from them.
Representative Story, through the chair, absolutely plan to, I think, sort of send this to any and every entity that might be relevant, and that would definitely include the Coast Guard, and probably do it in concert with the congressional delegation. We have a teleconference set up at the tail end of this month with the congressional delegation about the icebreaker home porting discussion, so I imagine there'll be a lot of next steps that come out of that conversation. And that's, I think there's four or five legislative offices in the building that are participating in that call. And haven't spoken with the Coast Guard yet, in part because just time. But, yeah, I want to get it passed and then definitely intend to share it with the Coast Guard.
Okay, thank you. Just a quick comment. I did have a resolution to name the first new cutter that comes off the dock lot, the polar bear, in recognition of the bear that's hanging up in my office. That was the first icebreaker ship that we had in Alaska. It was a sailing steamship. It had a 6-inch wood beam on it. It was originally built in Scotland for sealing, S-E-A-L-I-N-G, basically seal hunting. And then we acquired it, federal government acquired it, and then it served many years in Alaska. Unfortunately, it sank. It was a ship that really served the community throughout Alaska, bringing in food, rescuing people, as well as holding court and everything else on that ship. And so I've always wanted to name the first icebreaker after that the Polar Bear, because the polar star is always serving down in Antarctica, and there's no polar bears down in Antarctica, so that way we can keep it here in Alaska. Any other comments? Yeah, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say, I'm satisfied with the answer from Representative Kreis-Tompkins, thinking that this is going to go to the floor tomorrow. There's going to be 50 things on the floor tomorrow. I'm not going to, offer any amendments.
It's an interesting new sound.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
Very ominous.
We're going to take a quick recess. Okay, back on record. Any further comments on HR number 9? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pardon me. The thing I was just going to say is that I thought if we wanted to change the words, in the state to in Alaska, that maybe we could do that as a conceptual amendment here in the interest of expediting the actions on the floor on this particular resolution. So anyhow, I'm not going to change anything. And so I just want to let the sponsor know, and I support it. But I just thought, yeah, maybe we'd want to do that conceptually if you were supportive right now and be done with it.
Okay. With that, I see nodding. Representative Kreis-Tompkins.
If I may, Mr. Chair, and Representative Tarr through the chair, supportive of it. I just think actually heard your comments.
Brief it is. Is this microphone on?
Wait.
I don't know why I can't hear
it. It is. It is. If we can turn up the volume just a little bit. I know I can hear myself, but and we have plexiglass.
And I'll talk a little
louder.
There we
go. There we go. Perfect. Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Tarr through the chair. I think just to maybe provide a little bit of time to think about just exactly what we want the resolve clause to say, and also I just want to be sure to consult Representative McCabe, given we co-drafted the resolution with him. I might suggest a floor resolution, but I will work it with all members just so it's hopefully unanimously adopted and not burning time. I'll be speaking with the members from the MATSU in advance, and anyway, just trying to pre-work everything, and then that might also avoid the legislative legal process of a committee substitute, which I think may be a sticky wicket in the next 24 hours, too.
Yeah, and I was going to add that and Representative Rauscher, if you want to go ahead and have that available for tomorrow on the floor, but the problem that we have is the drafters are so busy right now, especially with...
I could just do it really quick on the floor.
Okay, thank you very much, Rauscher.
I'll get Representative Eastman to write it for me because he's very good at it. That will...
All right, any further discussions? All right, what is the... will of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we report House Resolution 9, Work Order 32-LS0961/A from the committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Hearing and seeing no objections. Real quick, let me take a brief at ease. Okay, House Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs, back in order. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to withdraw that motion, please.
Okay, thank you very much. And I would like to open it up to public testimony. Public testimony is open. Is there anyone in the committee room that would like to testify? Seeing no one in the committee room. I don't see anybody online. Therefore, public testimony is closed. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Chairman Tuck. I move that we report House Resolution 9, Work Order 32-LS0961/A from the committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Okay, hearing and seeing no objections. HR 9, Work Order 32-LS0961/A is going to be moved from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. Okay, with that, we are going to move on to our next item on today's agenda, and that is a presentation from the Viper Transitions Program entitled Redefining Veteran Success. And for the record, Viper stands for Veteran Internships Providing Employment Readiness. Today's presentation will be made by Kyle Kaiser, the president of the Viper Transition Program, and Ryan Gostern, vice president of AAR Corp, which is the largest aircraft maintenance repair and overhaul company in the country. And we have them on Teams there behind us. Good to see everyone's faces. Mr. Kaiser, good seeing you again. So please, gentlemen, put yourself on the record and begin your presentations. I don't know who wants to go first, but go ahead and take off.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kyle Kaiser. For the record, I'm the president and founder of Viper Transitions. With me is Ryan Gertzen of AAR Corp. Due to some time constraints, before I get into the presentation, I'd like to have Ryan give a few words about AAR, how they're working with us, and the value he sees to our programs. He's back east, so he can't hang out as long as I can. So I'd really like you to hear what he has to say, and then we'll do the presentation and answer questions.
Perfect. Thanks, Kyle, and Mr. Chairman and the committee. I just thank you for letting me speak to you today on behalf of the aviation community. My name is Ryan Gertzen. I'm the Vice President of Maintenance Workforce Development with AAR Corp. AAR is a global aerospace company headquartered in Chicago, Illinois, and we have maintenance, repair, and overhaul facilities throughout the country in the lower 48, a couple in Canada, as well as one we're building out in Nagpur, India. And we've worked extensively through AAR's Eagle Career Pathways Network to really reach out to schools, communities, colleges, high schools, middle schools about the aviation maintenance career path and the importance that aviation plays within the United States. And we were excited to learn about Kyle and his organization, as it became very evident to us very quickly that what Kyle is doing for veterans and the fact that they really didn't have an aviation pathway set up. It took a few meetings and putting together the right group of people between labor organizations, the Aeronautical Repair Station Association, which represents all the repair stations, FAA-certified repair stations in the country, AAR being the largest repair station in North America, and then also the Aviation Institute of Maintenance, which is the largest airframe and power plant school in the country. And so I'm excited to have helped Kyle with a $25,000 donation to help with equipment to stand up this 12-week SkillBridge program that we're looking forward to launching in and around kind of June, July timeframe. And for us, as a large employer of maintenance skilled technicians, we were in a workforce crisis prior to COVID-19. We had over 200 openings just within our company alone that we couldn't fill. And the need for skilled, which by the way, this is a career job as an aviation maintenance technician, not just a job, it's a career. And it's a six-figure career. You don't start there, of course, but you work through companies like ours and ultimately to the air carrier and or a cargo operator, and the opportunities really abound for these folks. And so when Kyle approached me with his program, he had a SkillBridge program with another organization, but Kyle was focused on, you know, people who are veterans who are coming through that don't have the kind of transferable skill our sector, aviation, that you would, you know, that I think most organizations go after. When he told me that there were snipers and infantry men and women coming through, you know, those are the folks that this program is really geared towards, and being able to take them out of four to eight years of service, give them the skill sets that they need to be able to be successful in an organization ours, we felt was really a really great match for our organization. About 26% of our workforce is veteran, and so it is a really good a really good thing for us to continue to support our veterans transitioning. So I've got a few minutes here yet till about 4:45, but I'll stop there. And I just wanted to show my support for Kyle. And I'm looking forward to getting up to Alaska to meet that first cohort in around the August timeframe. And I would be amiss if I didn't say I have my first cousin lives up in Wasilla. And so he's been trying to get me up there for years. So now I have a really, really good excuse to get up there. So thank you so much. And Kyle, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you very much, Gertson. And yeah, thank you for sharing. And we hope to see you in Alaska soon. Mr. Kaiser, if you don't mind, put your name and affiliation back on the record and go ahead and continue.
Yeah, Kyle Kaiser, president of Viper Transitions. I was just going to ask, how do we do the PowerPoint? I see it up there on the projector. Do I just roll through it on my end and talk it over?
Yes.
Okay. So Viper Transitions, redefining veteran success. Our objective is to end veteran suicide. There's a lot of groups out there with the same objective. We took a different approach to it, and we started identifying some of the issues that lead up to it. Underemployment, unemployment, substance abuse, homelessness, all play major roles in veteran suicide. So our program is designed to catch veterans before they're in crisis. And we do that by connecting them to employers like AAR that agree to hire them once they've completed their training. And once they've gotten that agreement in place, we put them through the training and they move on to their next career. So there's no gap from your civilian or your military career to your civilian career is our main goal. So what we do, just essentially laid it out for you. We train them before they're out of the service and they roll straight into their next career. We've networked with the building and construction trades here in Alaska. There are locations across the country for those careers as well. Aviation with Ryan, medical lab technicians, auto mechanics. We're running a full gamut of programs available to vets, and it's working really well. One of the things we focus on, besides just skills training, is that resource connection. You know, a lot of times, a vet will get out, they'll be working, and then something happens in life, and they need assistance. Instead of reinventing the wheel and figuring out how Viper can tackle all of everyone's issues, we just reach into the network. So when we do our outreach, we connect them with people in the right organizations that are there to help. We work with the VA and their social workers. We make sure that people have a direct line to a person, not a 1-800 number. We ensure that they have a direct line to somebody within like Wounded Warrior Project or VFW. We connect them with VSOs if they don't have one. To ensure that when an issue comes up, they can get there. Another component is our outreach program. Hopefully we get to see you all out there fishing with us off of our goose this summer. We take an old goose out of Lake Hood and we fly out and go fishing. It's a great time and you really get to know who the vets are. When you're done, you know who they are, if they're married, kids, where they're from, why they're talking to you, what they're actually interested in. It helps us direct their, their career path to something that actually fits them. You see that picture there is Operation Combat Pike, the program I'm referring to that happened. These pictures are from last summer. Both of these gentlemen are now happily employed in careers in the Far Guys in communications, the Near Ones in electrician in North Dakota. And we've been placed quite a number, and I'll get into how many we've gotten here in a minute. Another program we're running is Fish to N22. On the next slide, that's an outreach. We're working on getting charters to work with us. The idea is you take vets out on a fishing charter, and you talk to them about careers. You connect them with advocates. You connect them with the veteran service organizations. You bring in the community of vets here to support them out on a fishing trip, and they're much more likely to retain the information that you're giving them. Every Monday I go out to the bases and I do presentations to everybody transitioning about our programs, career opportunities, etc. You sometimes get the glazed over trying to stay awake in a classroom look, and so we decided we were going to do things a little different, and we'll go to those things, talk to them, and they go, hey, let's go fishing. Let's go for a hike. Let's just get out of this office and let me get to know who you are. Because to us, they're not a number. In order to end veteran suicide, you can't treat them like they're another and just pump them through a process. It doesn't work. There's plenty of evidence to show that the system currently doesn't work, and so we're trying to change it up. We tie everything to our heritage. Alaska's got a rich history of service to our country. This plane here was donated by Mr. and Mrs. May. It's going to be used in our aviation maintenance program. It used to fly Marine VIPs back in the day. Part of our objective is to restore it and use it as a training platform. And eventually, the idea is to use it as a transport to be able to fly folks from around the state to come to attend training. So we tie everything back to why we're doing this, right? It's not a new problem. Veteran suicide, transitions, mental health, these are not new things. It's been around forever, and we're just trying to find a new way of tackling it. So by doing this with these planes, we're tying in multiple generations of vet. We've got everybody from World War II, Korea, up through Iraq, involved in this, and all different levels of vets. And so it's really awesome to see everybody come together to work on this. So far, we've placed over 100 vets into careers, ranging from building and construction to mechanics and medical lab technicians. Looking very forward to cracking the door open in the aviation industry. I foresee that one taking off in a real big way. We've got over 15 different organizations and companies that we work with both locally and nationally for placement. And our system is it's growing. So to get into how the program works, a company like Ryan's at AAR signs an agreement with Viper saying that they will guarantee employment to somebody who goes through our program. And the reason I bring that up is that it is what sets Viper apart from almost every other transitions program that's out there. There are many programs that will take a vet, charge them their GI Bill, give them a certificate that doesn't lead to a job, say thank you for your service, and pass them out the door. We did it backwards. I said in order for the system to change and for this to really be effective and successful, you have to get the placement taken care of first. And once an employer says, you know what, I agree, you're a good fit, I'll hire you, here's your wages and benefits, I can pay you, and the vet agrees that, you know what, that'll work for me and my family, cool, that part's done, now let's get you trained up to successfully hold that job. Instead of going the other way around and throwing a bunch of trainings and certs and honestly cool paperwork that doesn't amount to much, go backwards. Get the job secured first. Now we'll go get you whatever training and certs you need. And that's where all of our programs stem from, and that's what really makes us different. These are just a list of the programs we've got going on. We just graduated an ironworkers cohort last week. We had the honor of having General Smith and her staff come out and check that out. It was a great time. I've never seen a general strap on a climbing harness and attempt to climb iron. That was really, really pretty awesome to see. The V program is where it all started, the electricians between IBW and NECA. We got that program up and running, and I went, man, this is pretty great if you want to be an electrician, but not everybody wants to be an electrician, so how do we do more? That's when I started the nonprofit to branch to any companies outside the building and construction trades, etc. And so that's where it all started. Now we're working on the aviation maintenance program getting going. Sheet metal's happening in Seattle, and we'll bring in that locally to Alaska next year. And then we do internships with mechanics and lab techs as well. Demographics, this isn't anything that you don't already know, but it's important to point out. The country is looking at a workforce shortage across the board in a whole bunch of different careers. And there's 200,000 vets on average that get out of the military every year. 150,000 of them don't have a job lined up when they get out. So when Viper sat there and looked at everything, I went, well, so we've got all these industry partners going, I need manpower, I need employees. And then I looked at my veteran brothers and sisters going, I need a job. And so what we did was create a true skill bridge to go, okay, this is how you bridge that gap, and you bridge it to where it's successful for the veteran because they know what they're getting, and it works for the employer because they know, hey, I'm going to get this person and satisfy my manpower workforce needs through this program. Then obviously there's a whole lot of vets in this country. So when you start doing this The support you'll gain from all over the place. I've yet to run into an organization that doesn't have a vet working in it somewhere, that doesn't want to get involved. Reasons for the solution, we give them a new purpose. A big part of the issues that a veteran faces when they come out, all of a sudden you take that uniform off and, well, now what am I here for? Now what do? I've gotten used to having a mission or purpose. Even if you didn't necessarily agree with it or it wasn't fun all the time, you knew what you were supposed to be doing and why you were doing it. So now we just kind of take it and change it. Well, now your job is to be the best in your career field, and we're going to be that stepping stone to support you along the way. You won't hear us use the word help. To me, that's a trigger word. There's nothing more frustrating as a vet that was, I was an airborne infantryman. I was a sniper. I did two tours, ran multiple missions in places that aren't very fun. And when you come back and all of a sudden you're told, well, here, let me help you. I don't need your help. I could use a little support to get my feet going, and then I'll take it from there. So that's what we really focus on, is we're not here to help you. I'm not here to coddle you. I'm here to give you an opportunity to succeed on your own. And that goes a long way when we talk with these guys and gals and the military spouses. It's also important to stress that all of our programs are open to spouses. They get ignored a lot when it comes to most veterans programs. You're starting to see a change in that across the board. People are starting to involve them more. But that was one of the first things we did after initial launch, was open it up to spouses. And I'm currently working on doing it for dependents as well. Now, there's my conclusion page. I think I've kind of hit it all on the head already, but we're doing things different. I believe it's high time that a program that handles transitions that this way existed. I would like to highlight again that we're a volunteer organization. Everybody that's helping out with Viper, we're turning heads and getting things done, and we don't have any paid staff. We haven't received any grants from the state. It's all been privately funded. Ryan mentioned his donation, and that's helped immensely. But it's all through networking. We've been able to do a lot with very little, and I think that's important. Equally important is to know that we don't charge a GI Bill. I refuse to use a service member's GI Bill to pay for any of our training programs. And my reasoning behind that is twofold. I don't think you should have to use your GI Bill to get entered into your next job. You served our country, you did your duty. To me, that's written check enough. Secondly, I want them to use the GI Bill to advance their career. You go through a program and you become, best example I can give you is like an electrician. You go through an apprenticeship, you become a journeyman. Now you start working and, hey, I'm a foreman, and you know what? Maybe I want to start my own business. Maybe I want to be a project manager. Now you have a focus for your GI Bill to go back to school. And if you choose to use the GI Bill to supplement your income while you're going through an apprenticeship, great. But you don't have to. And that is our goal. And that concludes my presentation. I'm open for any questions and discussions. I know Ryan's getting short on time and has to run.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your presentation. I think we have a question from Representative Rauscher.
Through the chair, maybe. Is this preamble to a bill of some sort?
No, it's not. It's just, actually it could be, depending on, after hearing the presentation, how we can assist further for the organization to succeed up here.
So then I guess a follow-up question would be, some of the statistics that you said, that you stated, are those that you have helped get jobs. Now, are those in Alaska or someplace else?
Yes, sir. And those all came from Alaska, and we recently received our DoD SkillBridge Partnership recognition, and we're talking to four other locations across the country now, too.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. Representative Nelson and Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, Mr. Kaiser, it's good seeing you again. And I had the distinct pleasure of touring the plane that he was talking about on the aviation maintenance program slide. It is one heck of a beast, and I'm excited to see that come off the ground in a few years from now. I just want to reiterate my support for the Viper program, anything that we can do. Speaking from my own personal conversations with veterans, it's a little tough for an individual once they get out, distinguished in their career, to then be reduced down to stocking shelves at Fred Meyer's, because their resume might translate really well to the military life, but not necessarily over onto civilian life. And Viper does a great job at helping with that. So I'm just want to let the committee know about that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. And remember, Viper doesn't help; they support and assist. Teasing. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just appreciate learning about this program today, a topic that's very personal to me. My brother died by suicide. He's a veteran, so he is unfortunately one of those statistics. And from that personal experience, that transition was quite difficult. His death came a little bit later, but it's an issue as the co-chair of the Joint Armed Services Committee that we worked on and had a large round table with military leaders not last fall but the fall before in Fairbanks on this topic. And so I just know it's something that for folks in the military and everybody, just something that's so difficult, right, to sort of accept that it's happening, and then just need to figure out how to support folks. And so just really appreciate learning more about your program. Wish you great success, and I hope there will be opportunities for the legislature to support you. And if there are, let us know. And also, if there are, any ways we can support your organization as individuals, I would appreciate if you would reach out to our offices and share that information. I don't know if there, when you have an event happening, if there's, a way we could support you in that, for example. Like, I could even bake cookies for it. Whatever it is, before you all go out fishing, right? Anything like that, it would mean a lot to have an opportunity to support your organization. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Tarr. Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Tarr. Chair Tuck. And welcome. I appreciate hearing more about Viper today, and I really appreciate the donation. Was it Mr. Gertzen and his organization? I couldn't read his name from here very well, but a $25,000 donation, that's really helpful, I can only imagine. And I was wondering, how long has this been a national organization? For a long time, and then we've opened up a Juno branch, and where would that be, if you could sort of give me that perspective?
Yes, ma'am. So we haven't been national for very long with all of our programs. It started with the electricians, and that one went national right off the bat. So the program works. So, if we have somebody that comes to us and says, hey, I want to be an iron worker, we go, okay, great. Where do you want to live? And when they give us a location, we reach out to the training centers within our network at that location, and we secure them a direct entry into the apprenticeship so that they can go to work when they get home. Once they've been accepted, we run them through their training program, and then when they move home, they enter into the apprenticeship. As far as locations, we're pretty flexible. It really depends on the employer and the career field, where the trainings would be. We do have training facilities we can use in Fairbanks and Anchorage. But we also do internships through the SkillBridge piece, where if a block of instruction isn't actually going to fit, the veteran or military spouse can go intern with the company in order to gain the skills and training they need. We do that a lot with auto mechanics and medical lab technicians, because it's easier for them to go intern with the employer to be trained on what they need, rather than try and figure out, where to host it, what credentials an instructor needs to have, all that fun stuff. Because most of these companies have their own internal training plan for employees. And so what we'll do is we'll set it up to go, okay, this vet's going to be a medical lab technician for you. They need 4 months of training in order to hold that job down as a medical lab tech. Once we've identified that, they confirm the wages and benefits that the veteran will receive, and once the veteran and the employer have agreed to those terms, we'll do the SkillBridge internship, and they can start their four-month internship, and the employer will actually get them trained on whatever they need to be trained on. So location-wise, we're pretty flexible. It's really tapping into the network, depending on what different locations. Each base has a little bit different process to them as far as what they're looking for in their SkillBridge programs. So we really play it by ear. San Diego's pretty big on the aviation side, so we're looking at that. We're working with Marine Corps Air Station Miramar And they're also interested in some of the construction crafts being there as well. So it really depends on the installation, what they're seeing, their transitioning service members' interests in, and then we'll adapt our game plan to fit that. So as far as holding things in Juneau, we can do that. It really is just dependent on what program, what company, and the logistics behind it.
I think you follow up.
Yes, I was wondering if you had many referrals across Alaska to your program and how you are making sure all veterans organizations know about that, and that would be helpful.
Yeah, so we do get quite a few referrals from across Alaska. To date, not all of, but most of the folks that have gone through our programs are Alaskans. It's important to note that they might have been recruited from the military in Alaska or brought in from the military in Alaska, but a good majority of them are not staying in Alaska. They're leaving state to either move back home to wherever home's at or going where the most work opportunity is. Because a lot of the careers that we target, they're hands-on crafts and technical career fields. And if the work's not present, then they'll go where the work is. And so far as far as the networking goes, I'm involved in a bunch of different veteran committees. I've been involved with the Alaska Coalition for Veterans and Military Families since it got started. I'm on their employment panel. We've got a great network within DOL and the career counselors, the VA and the domiciliaries. But it's all word of mouth. We haven't spent really any money on any kind of publicity or advertising. We focus all of our the finances we give, we focus on running the program, making sure we can get people trained.
And one last follow-up, if I may.
Yes, Representative Story.
I'm just wondering about, and you might have mentioned this earlier, but the businesses in Alaska, how you're, you know, letting them know that we have people, since you've said you've had many referrals that are valuable to work for them.
Again, word of mouth. I do a lot of door knocking, and really what I've noticed with the Alaska business community, that tends to be the best way. I've done a lot of, hey, my name's Kyle, this is the program I've got, but I am not an Alaskan born. I'm a transplant from California that came up in the Army, fell in love with the state and my wife and decided I was never leaving. So I'm not really well known among the business community, but the people I do know are more than willing to make introductions to other companies. That's really how the network's grown. I've had representatives of the state introduce me to people they know, and it's really been a word-of-mouth, kind of grassroots, ground-up type campaign that we've been doing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Any further comments? Well, thank you, Mr. Kaiser, for not only your presentation, but the dedication that you have in military families in transition and assisting them in support. And then also thank you for your service to our country. Thank you so much. And with that concludes our agenda for today's meeting. This is the final meeting of the first legislative session for the Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs. I want to thank everyone for your attendance, thanking everyone for their participation, for their mutual respect for one another, for their decorum in this committee. We did some good things this year for military families, and I really appreciate all that everyone provided in their contributions. Our next meeting will be next January right here in the Grulenberg. Stay tuned to what the agenda is going to be. And if there's no further business, the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs is adjourned at 1:56 p.m.